From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with Pastor Rankin Wilburn, author of Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Pastor Wilburn in their conversation.
I was thinking about something you wrote, and that is the perichoresis of the dancing circle, the interrelationships of the persons of the Trinity, and understanding our salvation as being invited into the dance. Or, you know, I like to talk about something I heard years ago in reading various books about being brought into the life of the Trinity.
Yes. Yes. Very biblical language. You know, John 14, verse 20, or John 14, verse 23, this idea of being welcomed into God's life. Jesus said, we will love him and I will manifest myself to him. Yes, this idea of, well, again, that's why I opened the book with a quote from Dante. That's the Divine Comedy, which many consider, I'm the son of an English professor, many consider the greatest poem ever written in world literature. That is the journey of the soul. The journey of the soul is to communion with God. And Dante, boy, if you haven't done already, that would be a wonderful study to do on one of your podcasts. Dante's guides on that journey. I mean, he starts with Virgil, the epitome of classical learning, and then Beatrice, which was Dante's way of saying knowledge won't get you all the way home. Love has to lead you to God. But at the very end, in book three of the Divine Comedy, it's Bernard of Clairvaux, who wrote a lot about union with Christ. It's Bernard who leads the pilgrim to communion with God. And see, these are ancient. When I said I'm not doing anything original in this book, I mean, in some ways I'm saying we need to go back to the best thoughts of our best teachers and recover union with Christ.
You know, that's a little off point, but when you're talking about that, I couldn't help but think about the reality. I have 12 kids, and I think you have three. But the kids in our culture get so wrapped up with technology and the information overload. You just get pounded by this information, and you really don't have an opportunity to think about it. But even more to the point of what you're just saying, we no longer read these great classics that are so illuminative in our lives.
Yes. I mean, my kids are young. They're 8, 6, and 4, but I'm very interested, and apparently a lot of people are getting even more and more interested in what are we doing to ourselves with our technology. And again, technology is a great gift, but I'm one of those people who thinks we're going to look at our technology the same way we look at cigarette smoking. Like, what were we doing to ourselves? And our appetite for thinking deep thoughts, sustaining deep thoughts, one of the casualties of our technological innovation is our lack of depth. And depth is necessary to enjoy life with God. And not intelligence, depth is necessary to enjoy life with God.
So what's the difference? What do you see the difference between intelligence and depth?
Well, the way I put it in L.A., I think people have the wrong idea about L.A. People think some people in L.A. are shallow and superficial, and I'm sure some of that is true. But also, you know, people are highly educated, highly ambitious in L.A. They They are, if they stay here, they're at the absolute top of their game. And the way I phrase it in LA is there is no correlation between intelligence and wisdom. If anything, there is an inverse correlation. But intelligence, as our culture narrowly defines it, says if you are smart in a certain way, you will be rewarded with a certain life, and that is the good life. But the way I phrase it in LA is if you saw someone sprinting down the street and they were extraordinarily fast, like Usain Bolt fast, no one would look at that person and say, wow, look how fast he is. I need to ask him about how to live. I need to ask him about how to live a good life.
Although that's exactly what we do. I mean, if you have, you know, you get these guys that are great basketball players. Stephen Curry, he played basketball with my boys, and we got to know him really well. And his dad and I are good friends. But suddenly, I mean, I've known Steph as a high schooler. Now he's a great basketball player, and all of a sudden, people are asking him about world issues. He's not prepared to answer those questions. So sometimes we do make this correlation. You run fast, you're a great basketball player, a great golfer, and now you know everything there is to know about everything.
Well, we think if you're extraordinarily talented in a certain area that our culture values, that qualifies you to speak with wisdom on how to live, which is why Mark Zuckerberg, I live in L.A., which is why stars feel compelled or inclined to speak on social issues. And I don't begrudge them that. They're using the platform our culture's given them. But wisdom means skill. The oldest definition of wisdom is skill in living the good life. And my question in L.A. is always, according to whom? Back to this wisdom contest, who is setting the contours of what is the good and beautiful life? And is it Jesus? Is the Jesus way, is union with Christ your highest ambition? Is communion with God your highest ambition? That's the first commandment. Or are you letting the culture set your definition of success? And then you're just garnishing that with Jesus.
And that's why you get these people that have extraordinary lives and accomplishments, but they're filling their lives with empty trinkets because they have this God-shaped vacuum that you alluded to Pascal before that only Christ can fill. And if Christ does not fill that vacuum, then a host of besetting urges replace that which is really central, that which is really important. And that's how these successful lives devolve.
Absolutely. Yeah. Back to where we began. We're having a wisdom contest, and I think Jesus is the better way, and union with Christ says not only is he the better way, but he unites his life to yours, and he brings you along the way. It's a beautiful and it's a true picture of the goodness of God, that he, on this journey, he unites his life to ours and asks us to reset our horizon. That the horizon is now communion with him, that this becomes our highest ambition. To use the biblical language, I want to know Christ. I want to know the Christ that has already taken hold of me, Paul says. Not that I've already obtained this, but I press on to take hold of him who has already taken hold of me. That's one of the great pictures of the dynamic of union with Christ in the Bible.
You allude to this as well in your book, not allude, but I mean, you actually excavate this quite well. This whole idea of Paul saying, I want to know him and the fellowship of his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow or other to attain to the resurrection of the dead. Explicate this idea of suffering a little bit.
Well, that was the shortest chapter in my book because it's really the longest idea. I mean, Christ is, Isaiah, the prophecy of Christ in Isaiah, he is a man of suffering, well acquainted with grief. To know Christ is to know the man who suffered. His whole life was one perpetual crucifixion, one theologian put it. And suffering is integral to knowing Christ. It's integral both because that's who Jesus is. He is the man who suffered, and to know him is to suffer. But it's also integral in that this is one of the ways God uses to wean us off dependence on ourselves. So suffering works both ways. And suffering is, I think a simple but profound way of capturing the essence of it is the crucifixion is not simply what happened to Jesus. The crucifixion is who Jesus is. And that to be united with him is to be united with the crucified and resurrected Lord. And yet Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ and raised with him and seated with him in the heavenly places. But we, to experience that new life, we have to use language we're more familiar with, to enjoy Sunday, we have to go through Friday. We have to experience that crucifixion, and that's suffering. That's God's way.
You know, I want to ask you about something else, and this is we seem to have to skate around words today because the words have so much baggage associated to them. They become connotative as opposed to denotative. But we used to be able to talk about theosis or deification or divinization, but now we have to skate around those terms because the moment you use a word like deification, I mean, people, they come unglued.
Well, if it is even a familiar word, it's a frightening word because it suggests something that people are very uncomfortable with. And I try to be clear in the book that no one in the Christian tradition, Catholic, Protestant, or Orthodox, no one has ever said that Christians become divine in the sense that they are just like God. No one has said that we become co-creators or that we become, we are always creatures. Let me put it like that. And yet, Jesus has forever hallowed what it means to be human. So we have this phrase, well, I'm only human, and yet, well, wow, Jesus shows you what it means to be human. I mean, to be fully human, I'll say it clearer if I can. To be fully human is to participate in God's own life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to the Protestant reformers, they weren't afraid of this language. Some of their followers have been, I mean, to the point that it's almost non-existent today. You don't hear too many Protestants talking about theosis or deification. And I would say, wow, we've lost something pretty important, not just to our tradition. We've lost something important to the biblical tradition, to what Yaroslav Pelikan called the great tradition. And we have to recover that and not be afraid of that mystery, and understand that we're not betraying our tradition, we're honoring the best of our tradition.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem here, Rankin, is that we don't know our tradition. In fact, tradition has become a bad word in and of itself. So we're oftentimes biblically literate, but not historically literate. So people have a sense of the art and science of biblical interpretation. At the same time, they can't think back past the Reformation to the riches of the tradition of the church that ultimately gave us the Bible.
Yes, I mean, that's the one chapter in the book that I had the most difficulty writing was I tried to do a 2,000-year sketch of, it's ludicrous to say it out loud now, but I tried to do a sketch of church history of union with Christ for my conscientious readers who would be asking, well, who are you to say it's at the center and heart of the gospel? You're some pastor we've never heard of who lives in Los Angeles. And I was trying to say in that chapter, Hank, this is not my idea. This actually, you can pick your theological hero from Augustine to Luther to Calvin to Wesley to Edwards to John Owen to C.S. Lewis. You can pick your hero, and I can show you that union with Christ was at the heart of their theological program.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Pastor Rankin Wilburn. Nothing is more basic or central to knowing and enjoying God than union with Christ. It's what the Bible is all about. It's the very heart of the Christian faith and what makes the gospel good news. Yet, if you asked most people today, what is the gospel, union with Christ is likely not what springs to mind. Something is terribly amiss. Be sure to read Rankin Wilborn's essential book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilborn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or just visit online at equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you.
Welcome back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. On today's special edition, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Pastor Rankin Wilburn, author of Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. Let's rejoin Hank and Pastor Wilburn in their conversation.
You can pick your theological hero from Augustine to Luther to Calvin to Wesley to Edwards to John Owen to C.S. Lewis. You can pick your hero, and I can show you that union with Christ was at the heart of their theological program. Even if they meant something slightly different by it, they all agreed this was at the heart of the gospel. So this isn't my idea. This is an idea that actually the best and most conscientious hearts and minds, Catholic, Protestant, and Orthodox, could sit around a table and say, yes, yes, that is the good news.
If you think about deification, I mean, you have to, this is inextricably bound together with the church, because the church is a spiritual gymnasium in which you receive graces. And I was very heartened when I read in your book, the weight that you put on the graces that we receive in the church, whether it's the grace of baptism or the grace of the fellowship of the Lord's communion, the Eucharist, the Mass. I mean, it's referred to in various ways, but there's something that happens that energizes us, that gives us the ability to experience a union with God by partaking in these sacraments, and you can't do that apart from the church, and therefore the Christian life cannot, by definition, be some kind of individualistic endeavor.
Yes. Hank, all the pieces are falling into place. I mean, when union with Christ is lost, it explains our low view of the church, but it also explains our low view of the sacraments. Again, not universally, but why do so many Protestants have a view of the sacraments so at odds with our tradition? And they don't even know our tradition. And I would say, well, it's because we've lost union with Christ as an idea that the sacraments are how the living Christ nourishes our faith. Experientially and truly, and spiritually. So the sacraments are how we live out our union with Christ. The sacraments are baptism and the Lord's Supper, absolutely vital. Meditating on the Bible, where the living Word communicates with us. That's why the Bible is living and active, because the living Christ who is in us, the same spirit that inspired those words is the same spirit that is in us and speaks spirit to spirit. Union with Christ is how the Bible becomes a burning bush again, out of which God speaks to us. So recovering union with Christ helps us so much, not just with how we view the church, but how we view what you've called these means of grace.
Talk about the art of abiding. I love the metaphors, the examples that you use in the book, and sailing is my favorite one, perhaps in the whole of the book. A good metaphor for our life with God. We're always dependent on a power outside of ourselves. Cash out how you use that sailing metaphor.
Yeah, we're not, life with God is not a motorboat where we're in control, but neither is it a raft where we're just floating along. We are dependent, as in sailing, we are dependent on a power outside of us to move us. In the sense that all of change, all of transformation is by the grace of God. So we are always dependent on God's power from start to finish. And yet, as in sailing, it is incumbent upon us to draw the sail. To catch the wind, as it were. And I talk to people all the time who say, I feel very far away from God. And one of my first questions is, are you drawing near to God? Are you availing yourself of the means God has provided for you to know and commune with Him? And do you see these means as means of communion, or do you see them as rote duties that are kind of dry and arid? So I like that idea of we have to become skilled in catching the wind. But even as you catch the wind, you're not the power propelling yourself forward. A lot of times in the Christian life, we think that why am I not changing? And I think the picture I use in the book is it's like a man standing in a sailboat and blowing on his sail and wondering why he's not moving. And no, we have to catch the wind, and yet we have to catch the wind.
Yeah, and that really communicates. And, you know, another thing that communicates in your book is this, I think you use the illustration of a piano. If you really want to be liberated and have this euphoric experience of being totally free in playing, you have to put in thousands and thousands of hours of discipline. It never changes. I mean, I think about this with respect to golf. I mean, I played golf for over 50 years, and yet it requires this constant discipline. I mean, it's not as though I can say I have achieved and I don't have to work at it anymore. No, I got to work at it. And if I, you know, over the last year, I was going through chemo treatments, and so I couldn't play golf. And now I'm trying to play golf, and it's very, very difficult again. But it takes so much effort. But there's a euphoria in hitting a golf shot like you once did. There's a euphoria there that is worth it all. I mean, you just hit that one pure shot, and you say, wow, this was worth all the practice. So there's a sense in which you have to really work at it. You have to work at these disciplines that you alluded to. Dallas Willard talks about the spirit of the disciplines. You got to work at these disciplines in order to have this euphoric metaphysical experience.
Absolutely. I think the phrase second nature is such a wonderful and instructive phrase. We want the gospel to become fluent for us, but to use another metaphor, like speaking a foreign language, you have to practice using this new lens, using this new perspective, using this new mindset. And that is I think for anyone who is conscientious about it, that is difficult and onerous and hard. And we don't say that enough, especially as Western Christians. We're not talking about works righteousness. You are united to Christ. You are safe. You are secure. So we're not talking about that, but we're saying now that you're united with Christ, Now you press on to become who you are. I think the analogy I use in the book is teaching my little boy how to ride a bicycle. It was probably my favorite picture in the book because it's so poignant to me that I want my son to be able to enjoy riding his bicycle, and it was quite difficult and quite painful. But I want him to do this so we can enjoy riding together, so we can enjoy being together. And that's what these disciplines are. They are means to an end. They are means to experiencing. What you talk about, the perfect golf shot, I think as Christians we can also say, not always, but occasionally, God meets us as we draw near to Him. And there is a sweetness there that, Hank, I dare say, not even your best drawing 5-iron from 180 yards could fill your heart of sweetness of God's presence.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's a great metaphor, though. It's a great connection. You know, you said in your book, and I don't want to get personal beyond where you want to get personal, but I mean, say what you want or neglect to say what you don't want to say, but you say in your book that there was a time you felt like a fraud, that there was a chasm between what you said you believed and what you were actually experiencing. And to some extent, that became a driving force to dig deeper.
Yeah, I think there is a measure of health in that for all of us. I think if we're going to read the New Testament with integrity, I think, you know, Jesus, for instance, Jesus said, "He who believes in me, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." And I think we need to ask ourselves, are rivers of living water flowing out of my life? Do I even know what that means? Would the people around me say, "Wow, there's living water flowing out of his life"? And I think that collision between the promises of the Bible and our actual lived experience, I think that is a traumatic collision. And I want to say to all of your listeners, if you're feeling that trauma, that is a good trauma. That is a good, as T.S. Eliot said in one of his poems, in order to grow better, our sickness must first grow worse. That you are on the road to healing if you're feeling that trauma. But I think most conscientious followers of Jesus, at a certain point, they feel that. They look at the promises of the Bible, they look at their life, and they feel that gap. And they ask themselves, what am I supposed to do about this gap? And I use the word fraud because I felt like the words I was saying and the life I was living, I'm not just talking about blatant hypocrisy. I'm more talking about, I'm telling people how wonderful Jesus is, and in my own heart, am I sensing the sufficiency and completeness of Jesus? And I think to get there, I think to arrive there is a journey, and that union with Christ is both, it is both the end of the journey and it is both the means of the journey. That Jesus says, that's right, I am with you. And I will carry you all the way home. And we are learning to walk with him. How's that?
Yeah, I love it. And I also love the fact that you are underscoring continuously in your writing that there are dangerous half-truths that obscure critical realities. And maybe you can expand on that a little bit for those listening in, because so often we're faced with false choices.
Yeah, false choices. Whenever you have a false choice, you can know that your paradigm is broken. I mean, a false choice is grace and demand. That's a false choice. Or if you don't like the word demand, you can say when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me daily. That's a demand. That's a false choice. And how do we hold these? How do we hold these biblical truths together that we know are biblical?
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Pastor Rankin Wilburn in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth, and as our thanks for your gift, receive a copy of Pastor Rankin Wilburn's Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be right back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Pastor Rankin Wilburn on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or just visit online at equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Let's rejoin Hank's conversation with Pastor Rankin Wilburn.
Whenever you have a false choice, you can know that your paradigm is broken. I mean, a false choice is grace and demand. That's a false choice. Or if you don't like the word demand, you can say when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me daily. That's a demand. That's a false choice. And how do we hold these biblical truths together that we know are biblical? We know that Jesus said, we know that the Bible says it is not up to him who works. And yet we know that the Bible also says strive to enter by the narrow gate. And how do you hold these truths together without canceling or annulling or turning down the volume on one or the other? And I think union with Christ, you're going to think I'm a one-trick pony because I think union with Christ helps us so much, but I think union with Christ really does address some of the big debates the Christian world is having right now about Christ and culture, about is salvation mainly about the church or is it mainly about our moral standing with God? I don't want to get too technical, but these debates that are happening all over the church I feel like if union with Christ was our lens, it would bring a lot of clarity and a lot of healing, and there would be a lot more both and instead of either or.
What about the answer to the Lord's high priestly prayer, that we all may be as one? Sometimes when I even say that, I think, wow, this is a panacea. It is impossible. But then immediately you think, who am I as a mere speck of dust to question the living Lord of the universe who prayed this during his earthly sojourn, that we may be as one as I and the Father are one? That this oneness with respect to the body of Christ that we talked about earlier, how did you ever feel like this is never going to happen, this can't happen? I mean, what can we do in a practical way to work towards the answer to our Lord's high priestly prayer?
Well, let me put John 17 in conversation with Ephesians 2, which is another great picture of unity in the Bible. Paul doesn't say that one day Jesus will tear down the dividing wall. He doesn't say that one day Jesus will make the two one. He says that Jesus has made the two one and has torn down the dividing wall. In his wonderful book, Life Together, which is one of the great books on Christian community written in the last 100 years, Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that the Christian community is not an ideal to be realized. It is a reality to be embraced. Mm. And he says something so profound in that book. He said, people who love community destroy it, but people who love people create community wherever they go. Now that is, you talk about being practical. Bonhoeffer is saying, do you love your ideal of the Christian community? Because if you do, you'll hold other people hostage and you'll end up destroying community. Or do you love people? And do you see that God has brought you together? This is your brother. This is your sister. You don't know them. You don't feel like that's true. But God, it is a divine reality. Now, become who you are. Live into this. You are living a lie if you are living an unreconciled relationship with a brother or sister. And if you do that, you will create community. So to your question of John 17, I read John 17 and Ephesians 2 alongside one another to say, I have made you one. Now strive to live as one.
That is beautifully said. You know, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life. There's no question I'm in the fourth quarter. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't like to admit it, but I am in the fourth quarter. You are like probably half my age. I don't even know how old you are, and I don't really care, but I know you're at least half my age. When you're facing your own mortality, as I did last year, in particular with my cancer, when you think about your legacy, you think about, where is my legacy? What would I most want to have the peace about when I'm laying on my deathbed? Maybe it's hard for you to go there, but I mean, Billy Graham died recently. I mean, a lot of things were said about him. Talk about what your life legacy, I mean, if you're thinking about it right now, what is it that you would have liked to accomplish with your life?
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned Billy Graham, who was such a wonderful servant of God. But let's apply this lens of union with Christ to this whole question of legacy. And it really gets at the deeper question of ambition. You know, what is your ambition? And if your ambition is, I want to know Christ, and I want to be completely expendable to his will. I want to be his servant. whatever he has for me. That I want my legacy to be how he judges me, not how anyone else judges me, because my goal is him. My goal is not the verdict of men. My goal is the verdict of God. And if that is true, if communion with Christ, with God is the goal and union with Christ is the path, then this whole question of significance and legacy gets recast. It really does. It's the same week Billy Graham died, a young physician in his 30s in our community died. And his spouse had spent most of the last 2 years caring for him. And I ask, you know, is she living a significant life? You know, no one knows who she is. She is behind the scenes caring for her sick and dying husband. And significance is faithfulness. And whether or not, I think everyone involved in Christian ministry, Hank, this is, you asked me to be personal. I'll be as personal as I can. I think everyone involved in Christian ministry, that the passage in 1 Corinthians 3, verses 10 through 15, where Paul says, each one's work will be judged. How I read that passage is, the Lord works through us and in spite of us, regardless of our motives, right? I mean, God is at work, to God be the glory.
Yes.
And if God chooses to use you, to God be the glory. And if you truly did it by Christ and for Christ, that will endure. And if you did it to the degree that it was for your name or for my, to the degree we did things for our own name, that is what Paul calls wood, hay, and stubble. God still used you. God still worked in you, through you, and in spite of you. But I think this whole idea of legacy and significance, we have to put that on the altar and say, Lord, the only thing I care about is being faithful, and each man's work will be judged, the Bible says, each person's work. And on that day, the motives of our heart will be laid bare. And I hope privately that resets our ambitions.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I love that passage, 1 Corinthians chapter, I think it's chapter 3. You know, there's no other foundation other than Jesus Christ, but you can build on that foundation. But it does make clear that we ought to be building with those things that endure, gold, silver, costly stones, as opposed to what you alluded to in the passage, wood, hay, and stubble, the things that the breath of God's mouth will consume.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful assuming Billy Graham lived a more significant life than... In The Great Divorce, C.S. Lewis has I think her name is, if I'm remembering correctly, it's something like Sarah Smith. The point Lewis is making in that in The Great Divorce is, this woman whom no one on earth knew was a great hero in heaven.
Mm.
And she was a great hero because she was godly and holy and humble. And that God sees that and God rewards that. And our idea of significance has to be recast in living for the eyes, judgment, and approval of one. And whether or not we've lived a significant life, we'll leave that to God.
Yeah, you know, that's something I think about often. Beware when all men speak well of you. I mean, because it's really not the filter through which we should judge our lives. I think that's what you're getting at. I mean, the real issue is an audience of one.
And speaking of reality, that's all that is going to matter. I mean, that's what posterity thinks of you is vanity. And I think one of the reasons with so many of us love Billy Graham is I think somewhere he said that. I think he was keenly aware that he held the approval of men very lightly. As Paul says, if I care about the approval of men, I would not be a servant of Christ.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I loved your book. And we're excited all this month to be able to let people know about this book. But I think it is an enchanted reality that most of the Christian world's unfamiliar with. And as you've humbly said, you're excavating a treasure. You're not bringing something new to the table. But really, the way in which you laid this out, I think, is a great service to our generation. And there's no more central message to the gospel than this message. And unfortunately, many people are unfamiliar with it, but reading through your book will really help them understand this central message. This, I think you talk about this in the sense of dark matter, right? It's all around us. And it's entirely possible for something to be that central and for us to know that it is central and not to know what it is.
Yes, except the stakes are so much higher with union with Christ than dark matter. Yes, but that's exactly the point. I mean, I hope, Hank, I love that you loved the book, and I hope more people, the light bulb you had is, or what I hope more and more people have, of wow, this is good news. This is the gospel, and I want everyone to know about this wonderful biblical truth of union with Christ.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Pastor Rankin Wilburn in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and live Christianly. As thanks for your gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you the book Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or just visit online at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilburn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. or just visit online at equip.org.